First and foremost, let me state what I hope is very obvious, is that any hungry person should be a great concern for cause for concern to all of us. I mean, that's just a given. Now, there are times in my travels that I lie awake at night in strange hotel rooms and ponder things. I have 6.5 grandchildren, and doing a little probability analysis and speculation, it looks like my great-grandchildren will come of age and enter young adulthood roughly at 2050. Well, 2050 is a big day. We've talked about it a big year. We've talked about it already. It's the challenge of producing enough food and, frankly, fiber and probably fuel, too, at that point, to serve 9 billion people on this planet with about the same amount of arable land we have now and with notably less fresh water supplies to do it with. So that's a huge challenge. For us to meet that challenge, I think first we have to understand that there are consequences to political and policy decisions that are made between now and then. And if those decisions are not correct, the poorest of the world will most suffer the consequences. There are really two broad issues here, and I view one as technological and the other as distributional. Hunger in the world today is not a lack of calories, as our chairman so ably demonstrated with his presentation. It's a problem of distribution. And we affect that distribution by making the policy decisions that we do in areas such as trade and border policies. Trade policies are frequently the most protectionist in developing countries, between developing countries. It's unfortunate that the Doha negotiations have made a fundamental error in equating protectionism with development. Now, we could have a whole day-long discussion about that, but I won't delve into it now. We can ask questions about it later. We have numerous examples of countries that have shown their willingness to open trade, and those countries are the ones with the highest economic growth rates. But for trade to work, there are conditions that have to be met. Dr. Penn this morning laid them out. You have to have the infrastructure. You have to have the contract enforcement, you know, the law, the judicial system. You have to have all of the elements that get food and are responsible for the business activities from a farmer's gate to the consumer plate, wherever that may be. And that's a huge challenge. When you don't get those policies right, I think the clearest example of consequences is probably Zimbabwe, which had a very productive agricultural system. New government came into power. Policies were put in place that, in essence, has destroyed a very productive agricultural system. And there are other examples. My friends in Argentina, my farmer friends down there, I read the stories about, you know, blocking the roads and the challenges that exist with the government and their actions holding back a remarkably productive system from being able to engage in trade in the world as they should. And they can do that very successfully if they were not held back. We went through last year's spike in prices, if you will. We never had a food shortage last year. And I would differ in one respect in that, you know, those prices were not driven at least no more than about 15% by the use of food products for ethanol or renewable fuel production. We had a lot of factors. We had high energy prices that contributed to the price of foods. We had sort of a speculative frenzy going on, which also contributed in the marketplace. Since that time, some countries have floated the idea of developing an international grain reserve. All I'm say about that is the United States has been there and done that, and it does not work. Once those grains get into reserves, the surpluses are there. The market will always know they were there, and that puts a cap on prices. Well, you say, what's the problem with that? That's good for consumers. Well, that may be good for consumers in the short term, but longer term, it presents a real problem. The word sustainable is probably the most overused and ill-defined word in the policy environment today. But let me just give you two sustainable criteria that have to be met as we talk about this topic of long-term security for agriculture and food production. The first of those is economic sustainability. And it doesn't matter whether you're one of our large farmers in the United States, Mr. Chairman, or one of our small farmers in the United States, or a smallholder farmer in another country. To stay on the land, to be successful, there has to be economic sustainability. You have to be profitable enough to stay there. That's condition number one. Condition number two is, for production sustainability, whatever we do in terms of policies related to sustainability, we have to first ask the question, I think, what does it mean for food production for the future, for the food production that will be necessary to meet the needs of a world population of 9 billion in 2050? Some of the technological issues that exist, and they've been talked about already, so I'll be quick about it, is that we must continue to seek out new production technology, adapt new production technology, and not fear new production technology. Those countries that choose to turn their backs on technology, I think, will be left behind, ultimately. We already have some examples of that in the biotech, with biotechnology and what it may mean in terms of food production and perhaps not producing enough feed grains or not being able to get the yields and the competitive structure built into your agriculture that you would have otherwise. There's a lot of room for technological improvement in the developing world. We've had a lot of conversation about that. And it does not mean everybody adopting biotechnology, obviously. It means taking the technology that exists today, trying to figure out ways to apply it in the developing world, and then being aggressive about moving forward with the education and kind of implementation and investment that it takes to do it. Given the challenges that exist with the subsistence farmers of the world and trying to migrate those production systems into a larger scale, more efficient system, to meet all of the caloric needs that we will have by 2050, I still think it's going to be the advanced developing country farmers, through increases in productivity that will play the largest role. Now, that does not mean we should not make every effort in developing countries to improve production there, because I think we're going to need it all. It's not going to be a question of choosing one over the other. It's just that given the infrastructure needs that are there, given all of the elements that have to be put in place to really ramp up production levels in some of the areas of the world that do have some arable land, but that need some good care to go with that arable land, it's going to take a while. Sustainability is often talked of in the environmental sense also. Our production practices in the United States have made substantial improvements in their effect on the environment over the last 20 years. We've shown that major reductions in soil erosion and efficiency of use of fertilizer and higher output per unit of energy and several other measures occur today that was not the case previously. And I think that's important, and that's another element to the technology that can be transferred to the rest of the world. If we do allow these techniques to flourish, then once again, we can do agriculture in a very sustainable manner for the long term. My silver bullets, Mr. Chairman, well, they're nice silver bullets. I'm not saying it's going to be easy to get them to hit the target, but to maintain the momentum, we have to continue investments in technology, and we have to continue to have the willingness to listen to science and implement new technologies. If there's any number one thing that we need to do for the future of the world in terms of food production and reducing hunger, that's probably it. And in that process, we need to be sure that food safety is taken care of. Obviously, if we don't do that, we will have a rejection of a lot of the technologies that could be out there. And the second silver bullet, and this is the one where it does take political will, it takes trust, and that's open borders. Open borders and reduced barriers. Self-sufficiency is fine in theory, but the reality is the best self-sufficiency is free movement of food across borders. The biggest problem we had probably in the run-up to prices last year existed because countries took actions that restricted exports or prevented exports, and that just added to the whole kind of speculative hype mentality that existed at that time and made things a lot worse than they would have otherwise. If we allow borders to remain open, it's also a risk management strategy, because as we develop food production capabilities in parts of the world that don't have them to that great extent today, which we need to do, that's a risk mitigation strategy for weather events that may occur in one part of the world or the other. But that only will work if we do continue to allow food to trade across borders. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.